Evaluate this statement. You are only as good as your people. Certainly you can have outstanding plans, but if you do not have quality workers to carry those plans out, you are back to square one. Purpose of our discussion at this point in our understanding of management science is to present the human resources function. We want to see something of its importance and something of its activities. You understand, of course, this is merely an introduction to human resource management. For an organization to survive and for an organization to prosper, it must be able to identify, select, develop, train, and then retain qualified individuals. People are the most important resource for any organization. They supply the talent, the skills, the knowledge, the experience, the expertise to achieve the organization's objectives. Through the planning function, management determined the objectives for the organization. In turn, these objectives were analyzed through the organizing function to identify activities necessary to achieve the objectives and goals. Ultimately, the activities form the basis for either creating or modifying job positions in the organization. The challenge at this point is for management to match personnel with the jobs identified and to provide for their long-range growth and welfare as members of the organization. This whole process is identified as human resources management. Human resource management is the staffing function of the organization. Sometimes it is identified as personnel management. It includes the activities of human resource planning, recruitment, selection, orientation, training, performance appraisal, compensation, and safety. Human resource management is a part of every manager's job. Every individual manager performs each of these basic human resource management activities. Certainly in small to medium-sized organizations, the individual manager has the majority of the responsibility for the staffing function. As organizations expand and the need for more people is determined, a decision normally is made to employ a specialist called a human resource manager, or perhaps a personnel manager, to assist with the more technical human resource matters. The activities involved in human resource management are then grouped in the human resources or the personnel department. The director of education and training, along with other specialists in human resources, is responsible for assisting line managers in the operation of their individual departments. One of the areas where technical assistance is needed is the legal aspect of human resource processes. Before we can examine each of the human resources activities in detail, perhaps it would be good to discuss something of the legal environment within which human resource management must function. The legal environment influences all aspects of human resource management. Legislation has been enacted that focuses on discriminatory practices in the area of employment, wages, and retirement. For example, the Equal Employment Opportunity legislation is designed to provide an employment environment in which both job applicants and present employees are free from discrimination in the pursuit of employment opportunities. Equal employment legislation prohibits choices made on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, age, or national origin. It is unlawful for an employer to do either of the following: to fail or refuse to hire or to discharge an individual because of race, color, religion, sex, age, or national origin. It is also unlawful to limit, segregate, or classify employees for employment in any way that would deprive the individual of employment opportunities because of race, color, religion, sex, age, or national origin. The impact of most equal opportunity legislation is on the recruitment and selection of new employees and on promotion, compensation, training, and discharge of present employees. Recruitment advertisements can no longer specify male or female, nor can a company rely on word-of-mouth advertising to attract minorities. In the selection process, questions not related to job performance are prohibited. Questions on age, sex, marital status, race, religion, national origin, color of hair, eyes, weight, height must not appear on the application blank or in the interview. Affirmative action goes beyond equal employment opportunity. It requires an employee to make an effort to hire and promote people in a protected minority. The purpose of affirmative action programs is to eliminate the present effects of past discrimination on women and minorities. When an organization takes an aggressive or affirmative role in recruiting, hiring, training, and compensating, the purposes of affirmative action should be achieved. The measurable result of affirmative action is that the organization's percentage of females, males, and minorities performing in job categories is equal to the percentage of females, males, and minorities in the relative job market. The human resources area is in a direct position with regard to affirmative action. The pendulum swings back and forth on the issue. In 1987, court decisions provided that employers could promote women and minorities ahead of white males without prior evidence of discrimination. A simple conspicuous imbalance of traditional excluded these groups was deemed sufficient. But in 1989, the pendulum appeared to be swinging in the opposite direction. So the manager, especially involved in human resources, must stay current and be well read on where the pendulum happens to be at this particular time as far as government rules and regulations. The activities involved in human resource management should be viewed as really a series of interrelated steps that managers and specialists perform to acquire and maintain the right people in the right positions. Well-managed firms must forecast future personnel needs carefully. They are far too important to be left to guesswork. The overall human resource planning process for an organization, which includes forecasting the demand for and supply of personnel, has really three main parts. First, forecasting the personnel requirements. Secondly, comparing the requirements with the talents of present employees. And third, developing specific plans for how many people to recruit, that is, from outside of the company, or whom to retain and train from inside of the company. Human resource forecasting attempts to predict the organization's future demands for people and for jobs. Certainly many factors to be examined are the company's objectives, its growth, its concentration, its status quo, and the employment history of the company. What about retirements, resignations, terminations, promotions, and deaths? The combination of these two sources result in an initial forecast of personal needs. And then the human resource inventory provides information about the organization's present personnel. What are the skills, abilities, interests, and qualifications of present employees? The personnel inventory allows the managers to match the organization's present personnel strengths and weaknesses against these future requirements. Comparisons of forecasts and inventory in the process is the process of determining if anyone in the organization is qualified to fill the projected job openings. At this time, the decision is made to train present employees or to recruit outside of the organization. When the decision is made to recruit new employees, information must be gathered on each position. Jobs are not tailored to fit applicants. Employees must be chosen to fit the jobs. Human resource managers must analyze and describe the nature of each job in the organization. At the same time, they must establish minimum requirements so that suitable applicants can be hired. This information is developed through job analysis, job descriptions, and job specifications. Job analysis is the gathering and analyzing of data about a specific job so that a job description and job specification can be written. It actually clarifies the nature of the work and the conditions under which the work will be done. Job description is a written summary of the scope, function, duties, responsibilities, and relationships involved in a job. The job analysis provides the data necessary to write this document. Job descriptions help management to select, orient, and compensate employees effectively. And then there is job specification. Job specification is a document that describes the characteristics and qualifications needed in someone who could successfully perform a given job. A job specification helps managers determine an applicant's fitness for a certain position by defining qualifications for education, training, experience, and behavioral qualities that the person must have to perform the job. A firm is much more likely to recruit and eventually select better employees if it has clear job specifications. Now, armed with job descriptions and job specifications, the human resource manager can now contact potential sources of applicants. Now, notice these terms that we have used, and they're terms which certainly have application to no matter where you happen to be. We talked about human resource planning, where you're looking ahead, you're forecasting what will be needed, you're comparing what you presently have, you're developing plans on how many people you're going to recruit outside of the company and how many individuals that you're actually going to promote from within the company. And then you're human resource forecasting, where you're attempting to predict the organization's future demands for people and for jobs. This human resource forecasting, of course, comes out of as a part of human resource planning. And then you have human resource inventory. This provides you with information on the present or current status of the talents and abilities of those within the organization. And then you have certain things, certain documents that you actually are going to use as tools in finding the right individual for the job. We talked about a job analysis, the gathering and analyzing of data about a specific job so that a job description and job specification can be written. We mentioned the job description, a written summary of the scope, function, duties, responsibilities, and relationships involved in the job. And then the job specification, a document that describes the characteristics and the qualifications needed in someone who could successfully perform a given job. You put all of this information, all of these tools together, this brings you to the point of recruitment. Now, by recruitment, the organization attempts to identify and attract candidates to meet the requirements of anticipated or actual job openings. There are usually two sources of applicants. These are internal and external. Internal sources are the employees of the organization. A number of organizations have policies of promoting from within. This has a positive impact on organizational members and certainly the internal working environment. The opportunity for advancement has many distinctive benefits. Certainly, it can reduce turnover. It also provides incentive to learn jobs quickly. And I think we could say that it assists in making the individual a functioning member of the organization faster because the person already knows the policies and expectations of the company. Of course, there are also some negatives from internal recruiting. Employees who do not get the jobs may become discontented. And there's always a possibility that this policy, if taken to the extreme, can result in minimal, quote-unquote, new blood being brought into the organization. And that which is new is sometimes considered a low position on the hierarchy. This may result in limited new ideas and stagnation. One internal source is referrals of outside persons made by friends and relatives within the organization. Another method is to attract candidates by announcing job openings in the company newsletter and by posting vacancies on company bulletin boards. This strategy provides all employees the equal opportunity to apply. A third strategy is to conduct a search of the performance records of present employees with the intent of identifying qualified candidates, and then to encourage them to apply for these open positions. This practice is not as popular as it once was because it may result in the organization being accused of pre-selection for a job, that is, not allowing all candidates for a position equal opportunity to be considered for the position. A second potential source for candidates is, of course, outside of the organization. Organizations can develop programs using on-site visits to colleges, trade schools, professional conferences, trade fairs, and high schools. This device allows the company to create impressions, answer questions, and also to screen applicants quickly. Another tactic is either to place advertisements in newspapers and trade journals, or to place job requisitions with unions, school placement bureaus, private or public employment agencies, job services, and so forth. The success in using these sources will depend on how well the organization has described its performance requirements and its specifications for the job. In recruiting outside applicants, the goal is to select an outside source that will most closely provide the ideal candidate for the job. In the long run, the closer the recruiting match, the easier it will be in the selection process, and certainly the much better will be the employee. In order to recruit candidates who will fit the need, companies are looking to more non-traditional areas, sometimes retired people and senior citizens. This brings us to the area of selection. Selection is the process of deciding which candidate out of the pool of applicants developed in recruiting has the abilities, skills, and characteristics that most closely match job demands. The decision comes after the candidates go through a series of steps that compose the selection process. These steps could involve the following. Step one, the application. The prospective employees are requested to complete an application blank, which provides the manager with information on the education and experience of an applicant. It also provides information about the applicant's previous growth and progress on the job, as well as employment stability. A final point can also show simply by its requirements a person's ability to follow instructions and his or her command of the language. Step two, the preliminary interview. This step attempts to screen out the obviously unqualified from the pool of applicants. This interview may be conducted by the manager or a personnel specialist with the information supplied on the application blank. Step three, testing. The purpose of employment testing is to determine the candidate's ability to perform the job. The kinds of tests used by employers vary and are subject to certain limitations. Aptitude tests attempt to measure a person's ability to learn concepts and to master physical skills. Performance or achievement tests provide what a person can do at the time of testing. Personality tests measure individual characteristics and traits as well as particular motivation. They attempt to pinpoint particular strengths and weaknesses to match them to the prerequisites considered to be important in the job holder for successful performance. Most tests need the expert administration and interpretation available only in testing agencies or through professionals, such as psychologists and sociologists and so forth. For this reason, testing is usually expensive and should be used only when absolutely indispensable. To avoid discrimination or charges of it, most companies use tests that have been approved or recognized as non-discriminatory. Managers should be concerned with 4 points in testing. First, court decisions and federal agency rulings demand that test users must be able to show that their test actually predicts success on the job if those tests are to make decisions to hire. Secondly, the test must be valid. That is, test what it is supposed to test and not some other area of performance. Number three, the test should be reliable. It should provide approximately the same score each time it is administered to an individual. And four, the test must not exclude a significantly greater number of minority members than it does of non-minority persons. Because of the difficulty in meeting these criteria, organizations are minimizing the use of testing with the acceptance of performance tests in the selection process. Then step four is the in-depth interview. The in-depth interview provides the applicant's prospective manager or managers the opportunity to verify information on hand and to find out more about the applicant's interests, aspirations, and expectations. It also provides the opportunity to share information about the company, the job, its environmental conditions, and so forth. The aim is to have a two-way communication that is mutually beneficial. In-depth interviews may be structured or unstructured. In a structured interview, little flexibility is allowed to the manager. All candidates are asked the same questions in the same order with limited time to chat. An unstructured interview allows a free-flowing conversation. Only overall topics are prepared for the discussion by the interviewer. Regardless of the type of interview format adopted, the effectiveness of the interview is related directly to the ability of the interviewer. The good interviewer does not spend more time talking than listening. In addition, the interviewer must be guided by what are acceptable inquiries. He or she must never forget that inquiries about age, marital status, ethnic background, religion are illegal. And then step five, reference checks. Applicants normally are asked to supply personal or work references on the work application. Personal references, such as ministers, doctors, and friends, are of little value to an employer because applicants normally do not list people who will provide negative information. Work references, on the other hand, have value provided the reference feels free to communicate. A telephone conversation between former managers and prospective managers is usually more useful for collecting information than a written inquiry, because the applicant's former bosses can answer simply and directly with no tangible evidence that could be used against them later. An employee who received a negative written reference might decide to use it as evidence in a defamation of character lawsuit against the author of that reference. Credit checks are considered to be discriminatory and are a questionable practice. Then step six, the physical examination. Prior to tending a job offer, some organizations require potential employees to take a physical examination. The purpose of the examination is to prevent insurance claims for illness or injuries that occurred prior to employment by the company, also to detect any commutable diseases, and also to certify that the person can physically perform the work that needs to be done. If there are physical requirements in the job description and job specification, they certainly must be valid. If they are not, the company may be accused of discrimination toward handicapped workers. And then step seven, the offer of employment. At this point, the top-ranking applicant is offered a job by management. This may involve a series of negotiations on initial salary, but depending on the organization's compensation philosophy. And then we move into the area of orientation. Once an employee is hired, it is important to bring the person into the mainstream of the organization as quickly as possible. Firms accomplish this by developing an orientation program. An orientation program is a series of activities that gives new employees information to help them adapt to the organization and their new jobs. Its purpose is to turn them, that is, new employees, and us, the company, into we. The orientation program familiarizes the employee with the duties and benefits of employment. The employee receives an overview of the company, its history, products, services, organizational structure, important rules, policies, and procedures. The employee also completes appropriate paperwork, receives needed passes, has benefits explained, and reviews the job description. Finally, a sound orientation program provides the opportunity for the employee to meet coworkers, to spend time with his or her immediate supervisor, and to become familiar with the new work environment. The result of all of this is that the new employee feels more secure and more settled. Then comes training. Training supplies the skills, knowledge, and attitudes needed by subordinates to improve their abilities to perform their jobs. The amount and type of training depend on the type of job, the present skills of the employee, and the resources of the organization. Several training methods can be used. First, there can be classroom training. Classroom training is training conducted away from the pressures of the work environment. The employee learns the basic skills of the job and then is sent to the workforce. And then there's on-the-job training, often referred to as OJT. On-the-job training is a technique of training job skills while the person actually performs the job. Training normally is provided by the supervisor and coworkers. And then there's what is known as vestibule training, V-E-S-T-I-B-U-L-E, vestibule training. Vestibule training is training conducted in a simulated work environment complete with sample equipment. The trainee is placed in this environment without the pressure of meeting production figures. Organizations can provide training through their own facilities or locate even outside sources of training. Some companies have developed in-house or company schools that hold courses of varying lengths at company-owned or company-sponsored facilities. Another option is to develop cooperative training relationships that consist of courses offered by colleges, universities, and private organizations in response to the needs of the firm. Still another approach has been termed flexible training. Companies such as Motorola, National Steel train employees in several jobs. As an example, an employee at one location may also be able to work at another location. This brings us to the end of number 8.